This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed, your weekly hour of old-time radio crime, brought to you every Wednesday by RelicRadio.com. Our first story this week comes from yours truly, Johnny Dollar. We'll hear the Jack Madigan matter, his story from October 21st, 1950. After that, it's the adventures of Philip Marlowe and Night Tide, his episode from May 21st, 1949.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
Dollar, my name is Struhl. Struhl Bail Bond and Insurance Agency. State, federal, and immigration, all forms of surety bonds and insurance.
Oh, yeah? Well, I'm sorry, I don't need any.
No, that's not the point. I need you, to the tune of saving me $50,000.
How does that work?
I made bond for two men that were subpoenaed for a federal investigation. They skipped out, and I've got to find them.
Who's mixed up in this investigation?
Fellow by the name of Jack Madigan is the big shot. You know him?
I've read about him. Enough to advise you to give up. If he doesn't want them found, the chances are they won't be. Alive, anyway.
No. It's not as bad as that. Look, I came all the way from New York. This is worth a lot to me. Can't I talk to you about it?
All right. Come up to my apartment. Maybe we can work out a deal.
Edmund O'Brien in a transcribed adventure of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar, Hartford, Connecticut, to the Struhl Bail Bond and Insurance Agency in New York City. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Jack Madigan matter. Expense account item 1, $250, phone to New York for purposes of checking your reputation. I learned that you, Mr. Struhl, were by no means above reproach, but decided that if a federal court trusted your agency, I would at least hear you out when you arrived, which you did at 1 p.m.
Mr. Dollar?
Come on in, Mr. Struhl.
Thank you. Thanks for sparing me your time. I'm in a mess.
Sit down. You should have known better than to make bond for anybody that was going to testify against Jack Madigan.
Well, there was nothing I could do about it.
Well, who forced you into it?
Madigan. I've done business with some of his friends before, so he came to me this time and said, will I do it? Well, the way he said it, there was nothing else I could do.
Madigan stood the expense himself?
Sure. He wanted them where he could get his hands on them, and it looks like he did. Or they took a run out.
They didn't have to accept bond. They could have stayed in protective custody if they were afraid of him.
They had to if Madigan told them to. The point is they're gone. Unless I can prove they're dead or find them before they're due in court, I forfeit the $50,000, $25,000 apiece. I've got to do something.
Why'd you come to me?
I told you, I've got to do something.
Yeah, it's a federal problem. You operate in New York, and New York has plenty of hungry private detectives, I hear, and a fair-sized herd of policemen.
I'll tell you why I came to you. The New York cops are busy enough, and besides, to them, these witnesses are just two names on a long list of missing persons. And as for private dicks, I could never be sure that one wouldn't want to make a deal with Madigan and make more money not finding them than I'd be paying to find them. You get the point?
What makes you think you can trust me?
Well, you were mentioned by a fellow from one of the insurance companies I sell for. They tell me you're straight, except for padding your expense account here and there.
Oh, that's slander. Who told you that?
Don't make any difference. What's a little padding? I want to hire you.
Okay, Mr. Struhl, you've hired me.
Great.
Now, who are these missing witnesses?
Nippy Bruno is one. Real name's Joe. The other is Max Krause. I've got their addresses next to kin, what they look like, and so on. Yeah, I got it all in this envelope here.
Okay. Oh, there's one other thing.
Yeah?
I want a retainer. $2,500.
What's that for?
To pay for going to work for a man I don't quite trust.
But $2,500, that's pretty steep, eh?
Well, you don't have to pay it. It's up to you.
Yes, but... Well, I can't get it till tomorrow.
That'll be fine. A cashier's check. When I get it, I'll see what I can do for you. I didn't expect the check to arrive, but it did. Special messenger the next afternoon. Expense account item 2, $12.50, transportation from Hartford to New York City. Expense account item 3, $23.85, dinner and drinks, for a Herald American reporter who was more familiar with Jack Madigan than I. His statement enclosed.
A lot of things have been written and said about Madigan by a lot of people, including me. None of us really know anything about him, how much power he has, where he got it, what his private life is, if any. These witnesses being missing isn't even news. People who've gotten in his way have been dropping out of sight for years. Jim Schwartz, Big Tom Green, Woody South, just to name a few. I'd keep that in mind if I were you.
Expense account item 4, 180, cab fare. That same address to an address on 79th. The apartment of Nippy Bruno's next of kin, a sister, stage name, Vivian Brown.
Good evening, sir.
Hello. Miss Vivian Brown in?
Who shall I say is calling?
My name is Dollar.
Mr. Dollar?
She doesn't know me. Tell her I have some news about her brother.
Come in, please. This way, please. Miss Brown is dressing to go out. I'll ask if she'll see you. Miss Brown?
Yes? What is it?
Mr. Dollar is here to see you.
Who?
He says he has news about your brother.
Tell him to wait. I'll get a robe on.
Shall I take your hat?
Thanks.
Please sit down. Miss Brown will be right out.
What was your name? I didn't get it.
Dollar, Johnny Dollar.
What makes you think I'd be interested in any news about Brother Nippy?
Well, the mention of him got me in here.
My butler doesn't slam the door on anybody until I tell him to. What brought you here?
I'm looking for your brother.
Then you've definitely come to the wrong place. Why should you be looking for him?
I'm being paid to. The man who put up $25,000 bond for him wants to know where he is.
I don't get it. What bond?
You don't wear innocence very well, Angel, but I'll go along with the gag.
It's no gag, and I can do without your insult.
Your brother's due in court in 2 weeks to help the federal men investigate Jack Madigan. He seems to have dropped out of sight. Do you know where he is?
No. I haven't seen much of him in the past few years. He doesn't approve of me, and I don't approve of him. Does that answer your question?
It brings another one to mind. He seemed to think enough of you to use your name on his bond request papers. How about that?
All right, Peeper. I was only trying to do it easy for you. Red!
I heard it. You walked into something, Peeper.
I usually do. But I'm glad to see you in character. That automatic makes more sense than that phony butler act did.
Stand up. Better see if he's carrying anything, Vivian.
Okay. Be a good boy now.
Until you try to palm my wallet, I will.
It's all right. He's safe.
You can sit down, Dollar.
Well, what now?
He should be here in 20 minutes. I'll go back to my room.
Sure, go ahead.
What's the rough stuff, Red?
It hasn't been rough. But you don't know how close you came to getting your head blown off buzzing this door. It's liable to happen to the next one that does. Light yourself a smoke. We got about 20 minutes to wait.
So we waited 20 minutes. Vivian came back into the room in a low-cut number that was a good choice for her sullen brunette attractiveness. It made her look softer. But the few remarks she passed weren't only icy. They could have come from a longshoreman. I was waiting for a brother to come in. That would have made sense. What did come in made none at all. It was Jack Madigan.
Hi, Jack. Come on in and see what found me.
Well, what do you know about this?
How are you, Jack?
Fine, thanks. What are you doing with that pistol?
We wanted to play it safe.
Yeah, he's a detective of some kind. He was hired by that stool to find Nippy.
Well, that's interesting, isn't it? What do you have to say for yourself, my boy?
Matter of fact, I'm speechless, Madigan.
Oh?
How's that? I thought I'd have to find you. I didn't expect you to find me. Yet, at least, and here.
What's so strange about that?
You and the sister of the missing witness? Maybe not so strange at that.
Shut up! keep your remarks to yourself, you two-bit heel.
Cool off. Who makes me a highball? And you, put that gun away and go help her with the ice.
If you say so, Jack.
Of course I say so. Go on.
I'm sorry, Jack. He's been needling me for half an hour.
I ought to take her across my knee, waving that gun in your face. What for? Anybody knows you can't fire a gun in these apartment houses without causing a ruckus. What's your name?
Dollar.
And the man he Struhl hired you to find Nippy,
And the other man, Kraus.
Well, I'll tell you what to do. You go back to Struhl and tell him the boys are all right.
Oh, let's not be childish, shall we? And what river are they all right?
Now, see here, there's no need to take such a pessimistic view. I realize the press has given me a reputation for violence, but I don't deserve it. There's no reason for me to want to harm those boys. I'm not afraid of their testimony. I'm counting on it.
Sure.
And straight testimony, no perjury this time. Why, I've already talked to those federal men. I'm cleaning the slate this time, telling everything, and let the chips fall where they may.
What kind of stuff is this?
The truth. I'm tired. I've been at sword's point with the police and my government long enough. I've been offered certain little leniencies, and I'm going to accept. It's been later than I thought for a long time. I'm through.
You know, this is almost funny.
I'm dead serious. You go back and tell that police coroner tout that the boys are all right.
Where are they?
I can't tell you that. I've got them undercover for their own good. Now, Dollar, don't go off half-cocked. A lot of heads are going to fall after the three of us have finished this federal catechism. If you think you're the only one looking for them, you must be a stranger in town. You're trailing the pack.
Well, if this is all I get from you, I've heard enough.
You'll drop it?
If I don't find them before you're due in court, I will.
What do you want, son? Money?
I got some, thanks.
I don't like to hear that. I suppose it takes a lot of guts to be a hero, but it sure doesn't take much brain. Remember that.
I can leave?
Of course you can leave. Because I think you're going to talk this over with yourself and come up with an important decision.
I did talk it over with myself, but not until I found a cab stand on the corner and turned around. A quarter of a block behind me, I could make out the figure of Red, the so-called butler. Expense account item 5, $20, fare and tip to a driver who saw to it that our cab wasn't followed. When I felt reasonably safe, I gave him the address of the second missing man, Max Kraus. I didn't know what I expected to find there, other than an empty flat with possibly a lead of some kind. There was a trace of light showing under the door.
Come on in, Dollar.
Red. I didn't expect a butler in a place like this.
Come on in. Why didn't you use your head? Jack gave you a chance to.
Maybe I should have. What are you doing here?
I live here.
Are you trying to tell me that you're Max Kraus?
I'm Max Kraus. And now I've got to do something about you.
Can you prove that you're Max Kraus?
Why should I have to prove it? Go ahead. Think what you want to. You got brains. Reach up behind you and snap off the light. Don't make a play for the gun, Dollar.
What are your plans?
American wants you put away until after the investigation. Come on. This way. Back door's closed.
You can tell Madigan for me that this isn't going to work. If I drop out of sight for 2 weeks, somebody's going to get on the trail. It leads right back to Madigan.
This way. I got a car and a garage down the street.
That's him. Get down! Oh, Max, let me see.
Sure. Now you believe him.
Let me get your coat.
Get away. I hate your God.
We'll return. return to the second act of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, in just a moment. Once a year, the Community Chest comes knocking at your door, seeking your help. Giving to this worthy cause eliminates many separate appeals, which would be more costly in money, time, and effort. So when you give, make sure you give enough to cover the many campaigns the Community Chest includes. Give generously. Give today. Now, with our star, Edmund O'Brien, we return you to the second act of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar.
When the windows in the buildings around me started slamming open, I left the scene of the killing and carried with me a whole new set of thoughts on the Jack Madigan matter. None of them were good, but the worst was the fact that the description I'd gotten of Max Krause would in no way fit the dead man I now thought was Max Krause. Expense account item 6, cab fare to your address, Mr. Struhl.
But it's 11 at night, Mr.
Never mind what time it is. Find a chair and sit in it before you land on the floor.
What's got into you?
Sit down. Who paid you to hire me?
What did you say?
Who did?
Paid me to hire you? What kind of a question is that?
Answer it.
Well, nobody did. It was my investment. Who would protect it but me? What's the matter with you?
Come here, look at this. Read it right there. I want to hear you.
Max Krause, age 34, 5'11", 170 pounds, swarthy complexion, black hair, black eyes.
Well, all right, why did you give me a phony description?
Phony?
The Max Krause I found had red hair and blue eyes.
I don't get it, none of this. What are you talking about?
Krause is dead. He was killed because I didn't know who he was and drew him out into the open.
When did this happen?
It happened. I was picked up the minute I hit town and followed. Who else but you knew what train I was arriving on and the hotel where I was stopping?
Now, wait a minute. Wait a minute. I don't think you've got right to jump at these conclusions. I hired you in good faith. Well, if you don't like the job, then quit.
Not for a while. I stand a good chance of being picked up for questioning on that killing. I don't like that. I want an out. I want to know how it happened. From here, it looks like you sold out to somebody and hired me to put the finger on Krause. I don't like that either.
Let me tell you something. If I was crazy enough to do a thing like that, I'd do it so nobody could prove I...
What about the phony description?
It may have been a mistake. I don't know how it happened.
I think we'd better find out. And let me know when you come up with a story. Johnny Dollar.
Oh, where are you?
Not far from your place. Is Madigan there?
No.
Where is he?
I don't know. He got a phone call and left right afterwards.
Was the call about Krause?
He wouldn't tell me. What about Max?
He was killed.
Oh, I knew it was something awful. I could tell by his face. I've been scared to death ever since he left, and I didn't know why.
I'll call back later and see if he's in.
Mr. Dollar, I have no right to ask this, but there's something I want to tell you. Could you come up?
Can't you tell me over the phone?
No, I... Won't you come up?
You alone?
Yes, I'm alone.
Okay. I'll take a chance. It'll be about 10 minutes. It was a 5-minute walk, and I noticed that New York Street seemed to be quieter than usual. Inside the building, I walked the 2 flights up to save the noise my arrival would have created by way of the elevator. I listened a few minutes outside a door without hearing anything and took the plunge.
I had the feeling you'd change your mind and not come.
I almost did.
There's nobody here.
When did Madigan say he'd be back?
He didn't. He didn't say anything.
I have a funny feeling about Krause's death. But except for my getting mixed up in this mess, it was more Madigan's fault than your fault than it was mine. Why didn't he tell me it was Krause who was here? If he told me that, I probably would have believed the rest of his pitch.
Oh, I don't know. Nobody really knows anything about Jack.
Not even you?
Nobody.
You put 3 men on their way to federal court to sing and a few hundred wanting to stop him. The lid is going to blow. What'd you want to tell me?
I want to tell you where my brother is.
Huh? After what happened to Kraus, do you think that's wise?
I have to say it. I'm in it, too. I think Jack knew these things were going to happen, even about you showing up.
Knowing about it or planning it?
I know it sounds impossible, but I keep remembering things he said about how he'd have the government men eaten out of his hand. He was bargaining for leniency.
He told me, but why are you ratting on him?
Because Jack doesn't care about anybody but himself. One of the threats to keep him from testifying was that I'd be kidnapped. He'd known that Max would be killed, he'd have let him take me, too.
You think he did know?
He hadn't let Max out of his apartment for almost a month. Tonight he ordered him to go. I think he wants us killed, so it'll make it look that much more dangerous for him. Does it sound too crazy?
Well, not exactly, but it's hard to prove.
I know that. And I did a foolish thing after he left. I called my brother Nippy and told him all this. I don't know what he thought, but I tried to call him again, and I don't get any answer.
Where is he?
He's been staying with Jack. It's over on Lexington, Brighton Arms, apartment 302.
That's cozy. How afraid of kidnapping are you?
Oh, I don't know what to do. I don't know how I can stand staying here and waiting. Where can I go?
Get a coat. I'll put you in my hotel room. Expense account item 6, $10. Tip to the hotel detective to see that she stayed in the room. Item 7, 120 cab fare to Jack Madigan's address. I dropped my taxi a half block down and walked the rest of the way. What slowed me was the sight of a couple of prowl cars parked in front of the building. And even at that time of night, a small group of the morbid in a scattered circle on the sidewalk. I saw the body, but didn't move close enough to recognize it. Hey, what happened?
Huh? Oh, a shooting.
Anybody know who it is?
The whole country will in the morning. He was due for a big federal probe. That's Jack Madigan. Where were you, Fred? Taking in another of them westerns, I suppose. There was more shooting right here than the whole picket.
Hey, pardon me.
Yeah?
When did it happen, do you know?
Not exactly. They've been here quite a while. Oh, about an hour, anyway. Can't find a medical examiner, and they can't do a thing about moving them till they do.
Hey, Fred, wait till the editorial tomorrow night, huh? Oh, yeah. Oh,
got back in a hurry. What's the matter?
Your theory has just been riddled. Madigan's been killed.
I don't believe...
That's what the on-the-spot experts say.
I was wrong about him. What about Nippy?
I don't think your brother would have been there.
Were they the same ones that shot Max?
No.
How do you know?
Cars were parked solid at the curb and Madigan was too close to them. He couldn't have been shot from the street like Max was. You think Nippy would go to your place?
No, he wouldn't go there. That'd be the first place they'd look.
The first place who'd look?
I don't know why I said that. It... Yes, I do. You're thinking the same thing, aren't you? That I told him what I was afraid of and warned him.
That crossed my mind. But I don't care who I can send in for Madigan's killing as long as I can go home. You seem to be the closest suspect.
You're not serious.
You've given yourself a motive. As far as I know, you were with him last.
I wasn't. He left the apartment.
If that's true, you've got nothing to worry about.
What do you mean? What do you want me to do?
Go with me and we'll both make a statement to the police.
You think I'm afraid, don't you?
I don't know what to think about you.
Yes, you do. Because you found me in a mess like this, you think I'm as rotten as everybody else. I haven't been. But now I will be to protect myself.
Well, how badly do you need protection?
I know how the police are. They're just like you. They don't care either who they pull in for Jack's death. You tell me to go with you and make a statement. The police would love that. They'd love to count the whole thing off to jealousy or being afraid of Jack, wouldn't they? Wouldn't they?
Ah, you don't touch me. I don't care what they'd like.
Well, they would. It'd be much better to take me than to be laughed at because a star witness was killed right under their noses.
We can call them and find out.
No. It's easier to be rotten. I'll give you my brother. He is at my place.
How do you know?
I talked to him on the phone. He said he'd wait there until he heard from me again.
Okay. I'll go over there. But I want you to come with me.
Why? Haven't I done enough? Why do I have to see him?
Come on. I don't want to lose you in case Nippy isn't there. I'll do it. Give me the key.
Vivian?
Answer him.
Yes, Nippy.
It's going to work, Vivian. It's going to be a... Who's he? An insurance dick?
That's right, Nippy.
What are you doing here? Why'd you bring him, Viv?
He made me do it.
I asked her to make a choice between giving herself up for Madigan's killing or giving me you.
Nippy.
Put the gun away, Nippy. You've done enough.
Is what he says true?
He made me do it. He would have taken me to the police. You know what they would have done to me. But it's all right, Nippy. You can still work it out.
Get away from me.
She's wrong. You couldn't work it out, but you may do yourself some good by giving yourself up.
Why did you do this, Vivian? Did you want to get rid of me, too?
Oh, don't say that. You don't have to let him...
What are you going to do if you get rid of me? Who's going to take care of you? Who's going to find more Jack Madigans for you to play with?
Nippy, don't.
Who's going to do the job for you when you get fed up and afraid to tear yourself loose?
You don't have to let him take it, Nippy. I know you could take care of it when he got here.
Is she worth it, Nippy? There wouldn't be a chance to count me off to a gang killing.
You don't have to be afraid of him.
I'm not.
Then take him and get away.
Not him. I'm afraid of you, Vivian. You're going with me.
Stay away from her.
Nippy, let go.
And stop fighting. I wouldn't hurt you.
You will. Go, Nippy. Let me go.
Now, watch it, Dollar. Don't try it.
Let go of me.
Let go of
me. No. Vivian, get it.
I should have let him take it. Give me the police. Where can I find... Oh, there you are, Struhl.
Ah, good morning, Mr. Dollar. I read about it in the paper. They're holding the girl?
Yeah, as accessory. Yeah. And I wouldn't advise your going her bail.
No, I certainly won't. I've had trouble enough with this group.
You know, you didn't make it easy for me with that phony description.
Yeah, I know that description. It was given to me by Madigan's boys. I should have checked it. But don't worry, a mistake like that won't happen again.
None of your mistakes will happen to me again.
Huh?
You'll understand what I mean, Struhl, when you get my bill. Expense account item 8, same as item 2. Item 9, miscellaneous, $2,500. Expense account total, $2,720. Remarks? I'm holding my retaining fee until this matter is settled. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, stars Edmund O'Brien in the title role and is written by Gil Dowd with music by Wilbur Hatch. Edmund O'Brien may soon be seen in the Paramount Pictures production, Warpath. Featured in tonight's cast were Sidney Miller, John Daner, Clayton Post, Jeanette Nolan, and John McIntyre. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, is transcribed in Hollywood by Jaime Del Valle. This is Dan Coverley inviting you to join us next week at this time when we will again bring you Edmund O'Brien as...
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
How's for trying to sing it again tonight? $5,000 in cold hard cash and $10,000 in fine prizes are waiting for the CBS listener who can solve the Phantom Voice mystery. Dan Seymour will be on hand with those coast-to-coast phone calls, and Alan Dale, Eugenie Baird, Bob Howard, and the Riddlers will be making the music. And remember, there's many a fine prize for solving the tuneful little riddle songs that lead to the Phantom Voice mystery. It's an hour of fun and music to entertain you and perhaps pay off. Every Saturday night on most of these same CBS stations, hear Sing It Again. And now stay tuned for Vaughn Monroe Caravan, which follows immediately on most of these same CBS stations. This is CBS, where Hopalong Cassidy rides every Saturday night, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
When it started, the tide was high on the San Pedro waterfront, and a hot-tempered kid had murder on his mind. But there was a knife at my throat, a beating under the piers, and a corpse on the beach before the tide went out again, and the kid was finally stopped.
From the pen of Raymond Chandler, outstanding author of crime fiction, comes his most famous character in The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. Now, with Gerald Moore, starred as Philip Marlowe, we bring you tonight's exciting story, Night Tide.
It all happened in San Pedro, the harbor of Los Angeles. The lights on the ships were fuzzy through the wet mist that creeps up out of the ocean every night. And I drove slowly looking for the establishment of Mike Basso, my new client. One side of the crooked street was nothing but the smell and the sound of oily salt water sloshing through the pilings beneath the piers. And the other side was a tangle of warped, dingy buildings equipped to satisfy the thirsts of reckless men. You'll never get beyond the waterfront of any port. The foghorn out on the breakwater began to bellow as I parked near a U-shaped pier, labeled Basso Docks Private, and walked past a line of moored fishing boats to a squat two-story office. The bottom floor was dark, but the second floor had lights on. So I started up the steep wooden stairs and was halfway to the top when I caught the voices.
I don't want dumb excuses, Charlie.
One I'd already heard over the phone when I was hired. It was my client,
right,
Mike Basso.
But you'll make them jump or I'll get somebody who can. These boats got to be handled faster. Why, even the crook Johnny Dyke was better on this job than you are.
Johnny Dyke? Why, I ought to... Get out of my way.
The big guy with the Latin jaw shoved past me and stomped down the stairs. So I went on up into the office. Mike Basso looked like a block of concrete, his 220 thick pounds hunched over a scarred roll-top desk. But as I walked in, he swung a heavy bulldog head around and glared at me.
You never heard a knocking first, I guess. You Marlowe?
That's right. The moose that just left here got me all out of the mood for courtesy.
That's Sharky, my crew pusher.
Yeah.
Good man, Miss Flo. Come here. Sit down. We got other business. Have a drink, cognac.
Thanks.
Okay? Now, there's a hothead punk by the name of Johnny Dyke. I sent him to prison 3 years ago for stealing money from me. I made it as tough as I could for him.
Any special reason why?
Sure. Because I trust a fellow who works for me. Johnny Dyke used to have Sharky's job, but he took advantage. When the police grabbed him and found my money in his own house, he squealed like a pig and said he was framed. Like all cheap punks do.
How does this get around to you wanting a private investigator?
Because Johnny Dyke is out of prison. Got out yesterday on parole. And he's back in town now. Hey, you. What you looking at?
Your clock. How come it says 11:30 or 20 to 8?
It's electric. It was turned off last night. And I didn't start it yet. Now look. I was here with Ed Giles when he heard some noise on my private launch out there. He went down to see about it and...
Who's Ed Giles?
My general manager. While he was gone, the lights went out in here. That's when I got clubbed on the head. When I went down, I got kicked around. Plenty. I'd be killed right now, but Sharky happened to come along and the guy was scared off of me.
Well, did you happen to see who it was?
No. Ed Giles did. He got a good look. He admitted it. Only he claims he don't know who it was. But he lies. On account of he's an old friend of Johnny Dyke's.
Well, maybe Giles isn't lying. What makes you so certain it was Johnny who slugged you?
They found this. Just a book of matches, huh?
Mm-hmm.
But see how the edges are crimped. Johnny Dyke always did that. He's nervous, all the time fidgeting. Sure, he might as well have left his calling card for me. Ah, it was Johnny, all right.
Okay, Basso, but before you get too far in, I'll tell you something. I don't go in for bodyguarding.
Who wants a bodyguard? Here's what you do, Marlowe. Find that punk, see what he's got in mind. He beat me up once. Maybe that's all he wants. Or maybe he's coming back to put a knife in me. Just find out and let me know. That's all.
I looked out at the fishing boats along the pier, gently nudging each other, while Mike Basso told me that Johnny had a blonde wife named Christine, who ran the Albatross Cafe, and that Ed Giles lived alone in a house at 43 Terminal Road. That was enough for a starter. So I said I'd keep in touch and left. As I walked off the pier, the blinking neon light from a sign across the street made a swirling green veil out of the mist between me and my car. So I almost got up to it before I saw her, leaning lazily against the door on the driver's side. A girl in a tight black silk dress, cheap fur jacket, and double ankle strap spikes. She smiled with one corner of her red mouth as I walked up to her and stopped.
Hello, sugar.
Hiya, sweetheart.
The name's Ginger.
Oh, that's too bad. Ginger always gives me hives.
Don't be like that. What did Mike Basso have to say?
Yeah, we were talking business, baby, that's all. Say, tell me, which way to Terminal Road?
It intersects about 10 blocks down.
Mm-hmm.
What's the number?
43.
Oh, you'll want to turn right then. Ed's place is a cozy, secluded one by the water.
Oh, thanks. You know Mr. Giles, huh?
Yeah, he's around Mike all the time. He's nothing.
Well, I'll see you around.
So long, handsome.
Yeah? You want something?
You Giles, Mike Basso's man?
Yeah. So what?
I'm Marlowe, private detective. I'm looking for Johnny Dyke.
Why'd you come here?
Because you're a friend of his, the only one.
I haven't seen or heard from him, so I'm afraid I can't help you.
Now, wait a minute. Let's go inside. I'd like to talk about the kid.
Hey, now, look.
He's put himself in a pretty hopeless situation coming back here to Pedro. What do you think?
Because he's got enemies like Mike Basso and Sharkey?
Yeah. What's he going to do? Fight it out or be smart and leave Tom?
Listen, private investigator, I told you once. I don't know because I haven't seen him.
You're a liar. You saw him last night.
You're working for Mike, aren't you? Get out, Peter.
Don't shove.
I'll shove harder than that, brother.
Okay, Giles. We'll try it the hard way. Now, where's Johnny?
I don't know.
Come on, get up. Get up. Let's play again. You saw him last night, didn't you? Didn't you?
Oh, all right. I saw him about 11:30. I was standing on the deck of Mike's launch when I heard a commotion and looked up. I saw Johnny jump down the stairs from Mike's office and run off the pier. I haven't seen him since, and that's the truth.
Okay. Sorry I had to make a squeal on a friend. Where's the Albatross Cafe?
The Albatross?
Yeah.
On the corner of Front and Castle Avenue. But look, can't you leave Chris out of this? She's a good kid. She's been through a lot already.
Think Johnny's going to leave her out of it? Besides, it's for her own good that I want to see her.
Yeah, I suppose you're right. But I'll tell you something for your own good, too, Marlowe. If you find Johnny Dyke, don't push him too hard. He was tough before he left. Now he'll have rawhide for brains. Depend on it.
At the corner of Front and Castle, I spotted the Albatross Cafe. Half on land, half teetering on a set of spindly stilts, ringing the high water mark with jagged lumps of barnacles. I parked down the street and started back when the door swung open and the lantern-jawed moose Sharkey lumbered out. I watched him cross the street without seeing me and disappear between two buildings. I waited a couple of minutes, and then I went in. Took a booth near the front. The place was neat and clean, even the tablecloths. A soft, brown-eyed blonde in a crisp peasant dress picked up a menu and came over.
Good evening, sir.
Chris?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, Chris, it's probably not on the menu around here, but How about a double order of plain facts, straight?
What are you talking about?
Johnny. You remember Johnny Dyke, your husband?
Who are you, mister?
Private detective named Marlowe. All I want to do is talk to him, Chris. Just talk. Is he here?
No, I haven't seen him. He hasn't even called me.
How do you feel about this bird known as Sharky?
He's a liar.
Oh?
He always crowded Johnny, and now he's got his job.
I hear he knows something. Have you seen him lately?
No, I haven't.
That's funny. He just left here.
Okay, so I'm a liar.
Maybe you're just blind. I've heard that love does that, baby.
Maybe. Is there any skin off your nose?
Nope. Cigarette? Then how about a match for me, huh?
I suppose so. Let's see. Yeah. Here.
Thanks. Hey, these are cute. That crimp border around the edge, especially. The one put there by somebody's jittery thumbnail, huh?
Listen,
Maybe your eyes are bad. Maybe not, Chris. But you better do something about your nerves. They're shot. Good night, baby. I didn't look back, but I knew she was watching me all the way out the door and down the street, so I made it real good as far as the next block and around the corner. Then I doubled back fast and stayed in the shadows until I got within sight of the Albatross Cafe again. And in time to see a man ease out a side door and slip out of sight among the pilings under the building. I moved in closer and found a rickety trail of greasy planks that led out through the forest of slimy pilings under the piers. I'd have felt better on a tight rope, but it was home ground to Johnny Dyke. I felt my way slowly along the slippery planks. And from behind a piling, an arm like steel springs snapped under my chin while a hand pressed the point of a long, thin knife with a curved white handle up against my throat.
You said you wanted to talk to me, Marlowe, so talk. But fast, because I don't have much time.
Ease up on my throat, will you?
Okay.
Now, you're a sucker. Why don't you try to give up, trying to even the score? Get out of town and forget it.
Sure. Sure, to you, that's easy. You didn't spend three long years in the cooler for something you didn't do. I'm going to get even, all right. I don't know how for sure yet, but I will.
Wind up right back in the coop, sucker. For keeps this time, is it going to be worth it?
Could be. I was a good boy up there. Every time I wanted to slug a guard, I said Mike Basso to myself instead. Now I got it all bottled up inside me. I'm not going to carry all that hate around forever. I'm going to get rid of it, and there's only one way to do it.
Ed Giles was right. You've got rawhide for brains. You better put the knife away, Johnny. I think we got visitors.
Sure we have, Marlowe. Rats. Big ones. The piers are full of them.
You should feel right at home,
Just
punk.
Don't sleep too long, pal. Oh!
Between the throbbing in my head and the numbness across my shoulders where my back had struck the planks, it took me 5 minutes to get to my feet and another five to climb up the street level. By then, the pier was deserted. So I headed for the Basso docks on the double with the unpleasant answer to my client's question plus the added attraction that I'd even seen the knife Dyke intended to use. I still had a block to go when I saw a hulk that had to be Sharky stride off the pier and turn in my direction. When he got close enough, I hailed him.
Yeah, I'm Sharky. What do you want, bud?
Is Mike still in the office?
Who wants to know?
Come on, this is no time to stall. Heavy, I'm Marlowe. I'm working for him. I got a message you won't keep. Is he there or no?
No. The office is locked up. He's gone. I'm looking for him myself.
Why? What do you want him for?
Because I'm pretty sure that Johnny Dyke is holed up in the back room of the Albatross Cafe.
Yeah, I only wish you were right, Sharky, but you're about a half hour too late.
Hey, what was that? Came from up the street there.
Yeah, let's go, Sharky. Maybe we're both too late. Let's find out.
Yeah. Hey.
What?
The dame by the guardrail. It's Ginger, a pal of Mike Basso's.
Yeah, you're right. Ginger! Ginger, what's the matter? What happened?
Go down there. Take a look, will you? I'm scared.
Down where, Ginger?
In the water. I think maybe I'm going to be sick.
Marlowe. Hey, Marlowe, come here. Look.
Holy smokes.
That's Mike down there with a knife in his back.
Yeah. A long, thin knife with a curved white handle. Belongs to a guy named Johnny Dyke.
in just a moment the second act of Philip Marlowe. But first, he may be a close neighbor of yours. At least he lives quite near you. You go to the polls, you elect him, you bid him farewell, trusting him to represent you in Washington. From then on, what happens to your congressman in the nation's capital? What pressures are brought to bear on him? In how many hundreds of fields must he rapidly become a good expert? Why does he vote as he does? Tomorrow night on CBS, you'll hear Ralph Bellamy, star of radio, stage, and screen, playing a typical freshman congressman in the 81st Congress. His story will be a drama taken from interviews and talks with many regular congressmen, with Washington experts, with politicians, with, yes, with voters like yourselves. This CBS documentary unit drama, The People's Choice, starring Ralph Bellamy, will come to you over most of these same CBS stations. Now with our star, Gerald Moore, we return to the second act of Philip Marlowe and tonight's story, Night Tide.
Lying with his face muzzled into the sand and the rest of him half submerged in the shallow lapping water, Mike Basso was violent death at its ugliest. Ginger turned and walked slowly away from us, trembling like a wino caught in the morning sun. But I told Sharky to go get the police, and I headed for the Albatross, where I figured I might get a lead on Mike Basso's murderer. When I got there, I skipped the formality of the front door and quietly moved around to the back, where I entered without knocking and made my way along a narrow, dusky corridor as far as a half-open door labeled Private, where I met Christine Dyke talking on the telephone. When she looked up and gasped at the sight of me and then slammed the phone down abruptly, I was willing to bet that the party on the other end had been husband Johnny. Nobody else.
What do you want, Marlowe?
Most of all, one Johnny Dyke in handcuffs. Don't bother with the my man pitch, honey, because at the moment the lyrics will make me sick. I just left a corpse that used to be Mike Basso.
Basso? Dead, Marlowe?
Yeah. All because of Johnny's knife. It's sticking in his back, Chris.
No, Marlowe. Johnny wouldn't do a thing like that. He couldn't.
You're wrong, Chris. He did. Now, where is he?
I don't know.
You're lying, baby. You were just talking to him on the phone. You gotta know.
No, I don't. He didn't say where he was or...
Oh, what?
Or anything about Basso being dead, so... Don't move, Marlowe.
Well, husband with knife, wife with gun. Charming couple.
Never mind that. I'm not going to see Johnny in trouble again for something he didn't do. So get in that closet, Marlowe, where you'll be out of the way. Now.
All right. In it is. But first, baby, a word of advice. He isn't worth it, believe me.
I don't. So get in and keep your mouth shut.
The closet in Chris's office, which doubled as a storeroom for the restaurant, had no window and a 3-inch thick oak for a door. So I was 20 minutes as a one-man mob scene bouncing the inventory around before I was heard. And a little man with a big meat cleaver who belonged in the kitchen opened up and demanded to know what I was doing in there. I heaved a number 10 tomato juice can at him for an answer, started running, and didn't stop until I was outside, in my car, and pointed for Ed Giles' cottage. The only other place I knew where Johnny Dyke might go for help. I came to a stop at the house and found Giles himself standing on the outside steps looking puzzled at a pair of taillights that were blinking out of sight. I knew I was too late.
Yeah, Marlowe, it was Christine. And all upset about getting her hands on $500. Said I had to lend it to her for Johnny's sake.
She say why?
No, only that he needed help.
Murderers usually do. Your boy Dyke just killed Basso Giles. A knife in his back.
Johnny? Johnny killed Mike?
About an hour ago over on the beach. Tell me, did you give her the money?
Ah. She ran out of the house before I even got to my safe.
Without saying anything?
Without saying a word, Marlowe. I wouldn't even know she was gone yet if I hadn't heard...
Heard what, Gal?
A desk drawer in the living room. Come on, Marlowe, quickly. I heard the drawer open when I was inside near my safe. I wondered what she was looking for when I called for it.
You got no answer. You ran outside after her, is that it?
Yeah, and I... Hey, Marlowe, they're gone. The boat keys. She must have taken them for Johnny. Asking for the money was only a trick to get me out of the room.
Wait a minute. What boat keys are you talking about, guy?
The master said, Marlowe. Two keys on a large brass ring. They fit the ignition lock on any boat at the Basel docks. She knew I had them.
Yeah, but she also knew that even as a friend of Johnny's, you'd balk at handing him over if you knew he'd killed Basel, right? Or are you still shielding old friends, Giles? Which is it?
Don't be stupid, Marlowe. I'd draw the line someplace.
All right. Now, one more question. Do you have a gun?
A gun? Well, yeah, I do.
Good. And get it, because we're going to the Basso Docks, Giles. Come on. We both piled into my car, and in something less than 10 minutes, ripped through the wide, empty streets to the Basso Docks, which were two parallel piers set about 100 feet apart and jutting out deep into the bay with more than a score of boats moored to the inboard side of each. But when we were out of the car and saw nothing of Johnny Dyke or the girl, and heard no sound other than the dull thump of wood on wood and the rhythmic slap of water against the hulls, I decided that we should split. And I told Giles to search one pier carefully while I took off for the other. But a minute later, just as I started out alone over the oil-soaked planking, I remembered the panoramic view of the docks I'd gotten earlier that evening from Basso's office. So I stopped, then turned and ran for the flight of wooden steps that led to it. I was halfway up them when I stopped again. There was somebody ahead of me and with a key opening the office door. I crouched low and moved closer one slow step at a time toward what I knew might be Johnny Dyke. But in the next second, a light clicked on in the office and I forgot all about being subtle and leveled the .38 in my hand at the belt buckle of the sharply silhouetted figure. It was Sharkey. I wouldn't move if I were you, Buster.
Who is it?
Marlowe, Sharkey. Who are you expecting?
Nope, nobody, funny man. But I wouldn't want it to be Johnny Dyke at the moment. He might want to settle old scores. You know, Marlowe, the price for two murders is the same as the price for one.
So I've heard. But now, lest we stray from the subject, Sharkey, do you mind telling me what you're doing here? And don't say I'm getting personal or I will. Come on, talk up like a big boy.
All right. I'm here because I don't like cops. Right now, they're down on the beach swimming around Basso's body like kids around a maypole. Also, I figured that before he blew, Dyke might come up here after the money he knew Basso always kept on hand. Satisfied?
In a word, no.
Why not?
Because I buy the switch first. You're here, Sharkey, to steal that dough and let people think that Dyke took it on his way out.
You can't prove that, Marlowe.
Only because I haven't got time. You see, Sharkey, it's an odds-on bet that Dyke's out on one of those boats right now. Just waiting for the...
What is it, Marlowe?
Sharkey, what time is it?
Huh?
The time! Quick, what is it?
It's 11:35. Uh-huh. Why? What's that got to do with Dyke shoving off?
From where I stand, everything. Now, look, Sharkey, get back down to those cops. Get them up here, and...
Marlowe, look! Over there at the end of the starboard pier. It's Dyke!
Yeah, and trying to get away. Go on, Sharkey, get to the cops, fast! I took the wooden steps back down to the docks three at a time, and then raced across the starboard pier and out on the length of it until I was close enough to the end, where I could see Johnny Dyke climbing over one of the boats. I was about to call to him to stop when I saw something else. Standing almost opposite me in the shadow of some nearby rigging, gun in hand and taking careful aim at Dyke, was Ed Giles. His finger slowly closing on the trigger. It was too late for words, so I followed suit and fired before he did.
Oh.
Got him high in the shoulder.
You fool, Marlowe. It's me, Giles. Dyke is out there.
I know. The man who murdered Basso isn't. He's right here, Giles.
What do you mean, Marlowe?
But I just found out you're a liar about seeing Dyke last night from the deck of Basso's launch. You couldn't have.
So what?
So you weren't shielding him, Giles. You were framing him. Framing him so that you could get rid of Basso and pin his murder on Dyke. Who you'd also get rid of while playing public citizen who's helping the private detective apprehend a killer. But what do you say, Giles? Is that it?
You're a smart guy. Figure it out for yourself.
Come clean, no. Giles, or I'll blow your head off.
All right. All right, Chris and I framed Dyke.
Chris?
Yeah.
What are you giving me?
Honest, Mama. We figured that we'd be in the clear with the money we took from Basso. And with Johnny well tucked away in a big, strong prison.
You dirty louse. Keep talking.
So we took advantage of Johnny's loud mouth and incidentally, you as well. With Basso gone, I was going to step into his spot.
You're the one with a loud mouth, Giles.
Well, Little Red Riding Hood. I went for your line.
Funny what a sucker a smart guy can be.
He wasn't the only sucker, baby.
Johnny!
Dyke.
Stay back, Johnny. Shoot if they move an inch. She's got a gun.
Shoot him, Chris. Shoot. Come on.
Stay away, Johnny. Get away from me.
Shoot him. You wouldn't shoot
please,
me, Chris.
Please get
you wouldn't
away
shoot
from
your
me
own
shoot
husband.
Him. Shoot
the
him
man you talked into running away until things quieted down.
Shoot!
The man you'd move heaven and earth to help.
so he could be shot in the back.
Johnny, no, please,
but you can't shoot me while I'm facing you, can you? You cheap, filthy, double-crossing little scum.
That's enough, Johnny. Cut it out.
Okay, Marlo. Okay.
It was a long hour of questions and answers before the police were finished, and they'd left with Chris and Giles in tow. Johnny and I were standing alone out on the end of the pier, where I was looking down into the shallow black water below and listening to him try to convince himself that the whole night had been something more than a bad dream.
Chris against me. Giles against me from the very beginning, Marlowe.
That's right.
Giles because he wanted to be in Basso's place. My wife, Chris, because she wanted him.
That's right. When Basso hired me to see what you had in mind after that beating he'd taken from what he thought was you, but was really Giles laying the groundwork, I fell into the role of star witness.
Hmm?
Somebody reliable enough for them both to play against.
Oh, yeah, I get it. Yeah, so you could testify that at first Giles had tried to shield me like a good friend.
Yeah.
And in the end, had to kill me when I tried to escape.
Sure. And just to make sure there were no slips, Kress kept feeding you instructions under the heading of wifely advice. Yeah, it practically ran on a timetable, Johnny.
Yeah.
But there was one slip. I found out Giles was a liar and trying to frame, not shield you.
Huh? How was that, Marlo?
Well, look, he said he saw you beat up Basso in his office at 11:30 last night when he was down on the deck of Basso's private launch, investigating a strange noise.
Yeah?
Well, Johnny, he couldn't have. Because at 11:30 last night, as well as 11:30 tonight, the tide was low. Of course, the launch with it. And from Basso's office, you couldn't even see the launch.
Yeah. Or the other way around. From the launch, you couldn't see the office, right?
That's it. So in the end, Johnny, you did have a friend who stuck by you. The sea.
Yeah. I guess that's as good a place as any for my... Maybe the sooner the better.
Any place in particular?
No, just the sea. I'll drop you a card whenever I make port, Marlo. After all, I really had two friends. I won't forget that. So long, fellow.
I watched him walk away. Until he'd gone the length of the empty pier and was swallowed up in the emptier night. Then I turned back to the shallow black water beneath me, which, where the sea and the land were close to meeting, was coated thick with oil and dirty and almost stagnant. And I thought a lot about Johnny, people like Chris and Giles he'd mixed with and trusted. I felt sorry for him. But then... And I looked up a little, away from the water at the pier and out toward the open sea where it was deeper, cleaner. And the further I looked, the cleaner it seemed to be. Then I remembered that was where Johnny Dyke was heading. And I felt better.
The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, created by Raymond Chandler, star Gerald Moore, and are produced and directed by Norman MacDonald. Script is by Mel Donnelly, Robert Mitchell, and Gene Levitt. Featured in the cast were Michael Ann Barrett, Lou Krugman, Howard Culver, Frank Gerstle, Georgia Ellis, and Frank Richards. The special music is by Richard Orunt. Be sure to be with us again next week when Philip Marlowe says...
I was hired to find a thief, and I did. 8,000 miles away from home. But first, I found a hammy Othello, a lush with a Luger, and a fresh corpse in the closet. All because the only woman in sight wouldn't play fair.
A tortoise told a household pest, goodbye, goodbye. An M.D. said, you'll pass the test up in the sky. This is the newest Phantom lyric on CBS's Saturday Night Sing It Again program. And later tonight, over most of these same CBS network stations, you'll hear the Phantom himself singing them. $51,000 ride on solving the Phantom's identity and answering one more question about him. $26,000 in wonderful prizes for telling who he is. $25,000 in cash for answering the extra question. How's for listening in tonight? Phone calls go out to CBS listeners throughout the nation. This is Roy Rowan speaking. Now, stay tuned for Gangbusters, which follows immediately over most of these same CBS stations. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That's Case Closed for this week. If you want to find more from Johnny Dollar, Philip Marlowe, past episodes of this show, or everything else Relic Radio, just visit the website, relicradio.com. There's thousands of other old-time radio shows for you to listen to there, all for free, thanks to those who have donated to Relic Radio. You can do so, too. Visit donate.relicradio.com or click on the donate link while you're at the website. Your support is much appreciated. It's how we can do this every week. Thank you again to all who have. That's it for this week. I'll be back next Wednesday with another hour of Case Closed.